nice and pleasant workshop. I would like to start just with some very basics about the uncertainty relation, which will lead then to a new formulation of the uncertainty relation, from which we will derive certain interesting properties of quantum mechanics and maybe generalized theories, or at least make remarks about them. So you probably all know this formula, which is that the variance of the position times the variance of the momentum is always lower bounded by some value, which is h bar over 2. And maybe just to make clear, I mean, it's probably a little bit confusing that there is an h bar, because actually the uncertainty principle has nothing to do with dynamics. And usually, as long as I'm just talking about the structure of state space and operator space, there is no h bar. And indeed, there is a generalization of Heisenberg's uncertainty principle due to Robertson, and he did that in 29, which almost looks the same, except that assume X is now an arbitrary observable, and let's say Z is another arbitrary observable, and then this is just bounded by an expression that is essentially depending on the commutator of these values. So it's the absolute value of the average of the commutator between X and Z. And you see in the special case of position and momentum, you get that as a valid equation. So if you think about this relation, it tells us something about how well we can determine two values. And as an information theorist, it's probably useful to describe that in a way that also reveals the information theoretic nature of it. And for that, I would look at this nice picture that Lydia has already drawn. So for the moment, just focus on this like left part. So we have a Bob. So this should be Bob. I will in the following call him Bob. He prepares a particle that he sends to Alice. So this is Alice. And what Alice does, she measures the particle either with respect to an observable X or with respect to an observable Z. And you could think of it like the Pauli X and the Pauli Z operator, and that this is a qubit and so on, and she will get an outcome. And she will tell Bob what observable she measured, whether she measured X or Z. And we can now ask, what does Bob know about this outcome? So Bob knows what the observable is, but in general, he doesn't know the outcome. And the uncertainty principle, in some sense, tells us that he cannot know both. There will be uncertainty in at least one of them. But, of course, for information theorists, it's more natural to measure uncertainty in terms of entropies rather than a variance. In fact, it's rather unnatural from an information theoretic viewpoint to use a measure like a variance, because the variance is, of course, depending on the labels, how I denote the individual outcomes, which is in some way not relevant as long as we are talking about the uncertainties, obviously. So this insight is already relatively old and was one of the researchers who first proposed an entropic version of that was Deutsch, and later an entropic relation was proved by Massen and Uffink. And it looks as follows. So I will write it now in terms of entropies. And I will, just to make clear that from an information theoretic viewpoint, we should be careful to denote from whose point of view we see, we should kind of denote from whose point of view the quantum state is seen. So this is a quantum state or a state prepared by Bob. So if I'm now calculating an entropy, what I mean is that the entropy is calculated from Bob's viewpoint. So I denote that just by writing it as a conditional entropy, where B should just be what Bob knows. So Bob has prepared the state. He knows what the state is. And there's some entropy about the outcome X of the measurement that he has. And, of course, similarly, I can denote the entropy of the other possible outcome. Alice does only one of the two measurements, but nevertheless, each of these terms is defined. I mean, this term is defined that if Alice makes that measurement. What does Bob know about it? And now Mass and Uffink proved that this is larger than some bound, which is, however, no longer the commutator. It's something else. I call that C. And the C is intuitively some measure of how incompatible X and Z are. So the mathematical definition of C is that it's essentially the overlap, the maximum overlap between the individual basis elements or eigenbasis vectors of the observables. You can write it like that, for example, as the maximum. I hope I said maximum and not minimum. So if X vector is the basis corresponding to the X measurement and the Z vectors are the basis vectors of the Z measurement, then I look at this overlap between X and Z, square that, take the logarithm, and this is my C. So, for example, if I do the measurement on a qubit and I measure with respect to the Pauli X and Pauli Z observable, this overlap will be 1 over square root of 2. So I have logarithm of 1/2, and this is actually the logarithm to the basis 2 that I need. So in the case of qubits with, like, mutually unbiased basis, the C would be equal to 1. And this is very intuitive as well. You could imagine the extreme case where, for example, Bob decides to prepare this particle with respect to the computational basis, let's say to the Z basis, then, of course, he can perfectly predict Z, so this entropy is 0. However, a measurement in the diagonal basis will have two equally likely outcomes, so this entropy will be 1. And, of course, this satisfies this relation for C equal 1. Now, what the non-trivial thing that the uncertainty relation tells us is that this is true for any state. So if Bob tries to make this outcome a little bit more certain by choosing a different state, then he will unavoidably make that outcome less certain, so that the total entropy of the two is always 1. So this relation here has, of course, a very high significance also for foundations. I'm not sure whether this is correct, but I would guess that also Rob's toy model is somehow motivated by such things, where he says that a physical system is such that we can never know both the measurement outcomes of two different measurements. We can only choose which one we want to know. So in that sense, this thing is kind of in some way capturing one of the distinguishing features of quantum theory to classical theory. Yesterday I discovered, by the way, a new use of this inequality, because yesterday evening I was approached by two girls which were apparently in love with two boys here at PI, and they wanted to write a love letter and needed some formulas for that, so I gave them this formula to be used. So if any one of you receives this letter, then this is how it was created. So it should contain an uncertainty relation. I don't know what that means for the love between this, but okay. Anyway, I will not now go into that, but rather tell you something which is related to another old or well-known result, which is an observation. An observation that was already made in the EPR paper. And the observation is the following. Bob can, of course, be more clever, as indicated here. So instead of preparing a particle and then just in some state and waiting for Alice to measure, he could just prepare a particle in such a way that it's maximally entangled with something he keeps in a quantum memory. So you could imagine that he prepares, for example, a Bell state between the particle he's going to send to Alice and a particle he keeps at home. Now, when you look at that, then obviously, so let's say for a quantum Bob, so to speak, you have the following situation. If Alice now measures in the X spaces, then the outcome of that will be completely determined by what he has in his quantum memory. So in other words, and this is just trivial to see, is that the entropy of X, given if B is now what, so B is now, in contrast to what I have here, I mean, still the same, it's just what Bob knows, but it could include a quantum memory. So I don't any longer make the restriction that Bob is somehow bound to prepare the thing and only keep classical information about the particle. Then this thing, as well as, of course, the entropy of the other measurement at the same time, for the same state, this is important, could both be equal to zero. So this is not a particularly surprising thing once we know the EPR paper, but it's somehow interesting in the context of the uncertainty relation. And now I unfortunately forget this issue, so there was actually a New Scientist article about that with the title Goodbye Heisenberg and the End of Uncertainty. It's actually quite interesting to read. Roger Kolbeck has a copy of it. It also describes how Stephanie and Jonathan tried to explain the uncertainty principle to 11-year-old kids in a coffee using elephants and tigers and stuff. So it's a recommendable article. I can later show you the cover of that. Okay, so far we just made an observation that the uncertainty principle, as it is stated here, is obviously not correct if Bob keeps information in a quantum memory, in this sense, in the sense I described it to you. So these entropies can, for the same state, be zero. So the question is now, what is it still true that we have an uncertainty relation? So this makes the uncertainty principle completely uninteresting. Both quantities are zero. So we could ask, is there a non-trivial way to state the uncertainty principle in such a way that it's still true in the general case where Bob is quantum mechanical? And the answer is yes, and I would like to quickly state this relation. So maybe I can just erase this part here. And I don't need to rewrite the equation. I just need to make a very minor change to it. Namely, I erase Bob here and put some other system there, for example, Eve. And now my claim is, and I'm not going to show you a proof, but this is proof, that this is now, again, a valid uncertainty principle, which, unlike the uncertainty principle that was there before, is always valid, even if Bob or Eve hold quantum information, so to speak. So in other words, we have slightly modified the principle by just not considering the same party trying to guess the outcome. So the picture would be somehow we have here a Bob, and we have an Eve. I mean, at the moment, it's irrelevant that this should, I'm not now talking about cryptography. I'm going to do that later, so it's not necessarily an adversary. And then there is Alice here. Bob and Eve, they could join forces and prepare a particle, some state that they send to Alice. Now Alice measures and gets X or Z. Of course, she can only measure one of them, but she chooses one of these two measurements, measures that. Another claim is the uncertainty that Bob has about this outcome, about one of the outcomes, is plus the uncertainty that Eve has about the other outcome is always bounded by this very same constant that we had before. Okay. So this is just a modification. This result was proved in a recent paper by Mario Berta, Matthias Christandl, Roger Kolbeck, Joe Rennes, and myself. And there was a slight improvement of it, where this was generalized to POVMs by a group including Coles, which is here. There's, I guess, even a poster on that. Yes, you have a poster on that here. And there has been another improvement, which I will quickly show you, by Marco Toma Michel. Where is this erasion? Put this. Now a lot. Oh. So one could now ask, what does that really mean, this uncertainty relation? And in order to give you some intuition, I would like to state a slightly modified version of it, which is more operational. Because you could kind of argue that, okay, the fact that we have here entropies, why is why should the entropy be something fundamental or relevant after all? Why, I could have also chosen this variance or something else. So indeed, I can actually express the uncertainty relation using other types of entropies. And I will just explain what they are. So this is what I call a max entropy of X given B. And then there is something that is called a min entropy of set given E. And this is still larger or equal than this constant. So the constant is always the same. The definition has disappeared, but it's a constant that measures how incompatible set and X are. So what are these measures? So this max entropy, I will not give you the definition, but I can give you the operational meaning of that. The operational meaning of the max entropy is that it's, so to speak, the number of bits required by Bob to reproduce X. So it's somehow how many bits is he lacking such that he could at the end reconstruct X. The mean entropy is somehow a complementary thing. It's the number of bits that are extractable. I should say uniform bits. So otherwise it's probably not interesting. So there's a certain number of bits that are completely unknown to Bob. And so the question is, how many bits are extractable from set? So how much randomness is there in set? Oh, here it's Eve. So how much randomness is there in set that is completely unknown to Eve? And now the uncertainty relation somehow gives us a certainty confidentiality trade-off. So we learned from Gilles' talk that maybe one of the basic laws of nature that we have received from God is that there is some confidentiality. This would be a quantitative version of that. So God could have told us that the more secrecy, so to speak, we want to have about a certain, or again, with respect to an Eve, about the value, the more certain we need to be about the X. And this is exactly, and this was already mentioned by Valerio, what's going on in QKD. So I will just make that as a side remark, because maybe not all of you are into QKD, but I would like to make this side remark, because it's quite interesting that this is really the core of security proofs, or at least you can use it in that way. So why is that? In order to see that, let me just rewrite this equation in a very trivial way. So move into that now. So I'm actually just moving terms to the right, but it emphasizes what we are interested in. So what we are interested in quantum key distribution is this quantity, if this is the adversary. So E is the adversary, and this is, so to speak, the raw key. This is something we get out of in a first stage of a protocol. And it can be shown, so this is, as I said, is the amount of bits that are extractable. So this is, in the context of quantum key distribution, simply the key length that can be generated. And then there is, if I now use this bound, the key, this tells me that there is some constant, C, minus this other entropy, max of X, given Bob. So if you now think of Alice and Bob doing key distribution, the only thing you have to make sure is that Bob knows the values that Alice has sent. If he has almost no, if he has little uncertainty about the values Alice has sent, then this term will be small. If we use the clever choice of the two bases, like in a BB84 protocol, X and Z are just the measurements with respect to the computational and diagonal basis, then this would be one, or more precisely, it would be equal to the number of qubits we have exchanged. So if this is small and this is large, then we will get a high key length. So this inequality is exactly the thing that makes key distribution possible. It tells us that the only thing that is required is that Bob is well correlated to the thing that Alice sends. And as soon as we can And we can test that. We can just make Alice and Bob compare their results. That's what's going on in QKD. They just check their correlations, and if these correlations are large, they have automatically confidentiality. So this is really the relation that tells us that it works. And I should note that this is not possible with the classical uncertainty principle. So sometimes people have said QKD works because of Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. I don't see a way how to make that work because, classically there's simply no way to compare an Eve and a Bob. It's really like this thing that makes it possible. But I should mention that the classical uncertainty principle is, of course, a special case. It's a special case in the sense that if Bob has classical information, then he could give the same classical information to Eve. So as long as all information is classical, we could identify B and E and retrieve the usual entropic uncertainty relation. Okay. So that is about the uncertainty. What can we now learn from that? So what we have seen so far is the following. We have seen that as long as we think of Bob being classical, then we have, or maybe I should write down again the standard relation. So the standard relation is that for Bob being classical, we have this relation. This is for Bob classical. So for classical Bob, this is true. For a quantum Bob, so if Bob is quantum, or maybe he also has to be clever because he has to use quantum mechanics in the right way. Of course, just being quantum is not very useful. So in that case, we have seen it follows from the EPR paper just by disputing entanglement, that these entropies are both zero. So can we now conclude from that? So one kind of interesting implication we could draw from it is that the uncertainty relation is not necessarily telling us something about the world around us. It is rather telling us something about the way we process information about nature. So the answer, if we always did process information in a quantum mechanical manner, we would never have come up with this uncertainty relation. So somehow one could argue that it's an artifact of the fact that we are processing information in a classical way in our brains. So maybe if we were not classical, whatever that means, we would probably have immediately written down such a relation, which is, however, not really, one wouldn't call that an uncertainty relation. It's more a trade-off between two different things, because we would also have that property here. And we would just know that if we have information about something in the nature, we need to somehow share, we cannot share it arbitrarily between different parties. So that's one point which sounds, okay, maybe a little bit philosophical, but one could argue that this could be interesting in view of the models we are looking at here. I mean, if you look at the probabilistic framework for a theory, then we somehow inherently assume that our information about the rest is in some way represented by a classical system itself. And I would now just, like to illustrate quickly that this is in some way a restriction. So the restriction comes from the following observation. Erase that. So maybe I should also say that it's not here the system that we are actually talking about. The system whose entropy we measure is a classical system at the end. It's a classical measurement outcome. So the thing that is quantum is only the information we have about the system. This is when we usually kind of lift things from the classical world to the quantum world, then it's the object we study. But here it's the information we have about the object, whereas the object itself is still classical. This is just to keep that in mind. Let me make an example. It's a very trivial example, but it somehow illustrates a potential limitation of our classical way of processing information. So information, let me just assume that we have a value x, like a measurement outcome, but let's for the moment assume that it can take three different values. And they are all equally likely. So this would be the values that x can take, maybe can, so, and this would be the probability of x. So this would be the probabilities of x, and x could be either 1, 2, or 3. So these are probabilities. Now, assume that we have, again, a Bob. And Bob has some information about x. So Bob could, for example, have the information x is an odd number. This is a possible information he could have. I could also put that information, strictly speaking, into a random variable. It's classical information about that system. Now, obviously, I can write down the state of this system, of x, conditioned on Bob's information. This is just how would Bob see the system. Bob would say, okay, this system has a certain probability distribution conditioned on my knowledge, which is now that it's odd. And the probability distribution is just, I mean, it's obvious what it is. It's just only consisting of two values. Of course, the even one has probability zero, and then there is the other one. So this new probability distribution captures all we need to know to make any statement we would like to make about the knowledge Bob has about the system. Now, obviously, if Bob is not classical, the situation is slightly different. So what type of information could Bob have? This is now just a different Bob, but a quantum one. And he could, for example, have a state. So B could, so to speak, be a quantum system in state phi. And the phi could be kind of just a direction that depends on the value x. So it could say this is, for example, phi if x is 0, if x is 1, this is the phi state if x is 2, and so on. Now the point is, if I now want, okay, the x is still classical, but I may now want to describe the knowledge that Bob has about x by just talking about x. So I could ask, is there a conditional distribution of x conditioned on B? And as most of you probably know, this is not possible. So it's impossible to define a distribution of x conditioned on what Bob knows. So this does not exist. It's actually easy to see that even if you're clever, you will never be able to define such a distribution. Because if you were able to do that, you would actually be able to, for example, prove the uncertainty relation. The classical uncertainty relation, the entropic uncertainty relation, as proposed by Massen and Huffink and Deutsch, is just a theorem that assumes very innocently that x and z are described by probability distributions. So if you now go into this proof and ask what in this proof does no longer work if Bob is not classical but quantum mechanical, then the thing that no longer works in the Heisenberg, in the derivation of this uncertain principle, is that the very definition, you cannot even define it, so you cannot even start the proof. But if you could, then everything else would, of course, go through, because this would just be a probability. So in some way, it's a very severe restriction to say that if we look at the system, a value x, our knowledge about that system is captured by a probability distribution over the different values. I'm not saying that there's no easy way around that. One could, for example, just integrate Bob into the language of these systems. But this is kind of the point I would like to make. So what we have learned, or what we can learn from that, is the following. If you are talking about a generalized theory, then because information is itself, of course, always physical and represented in our physical world, we have to also describe the representation of the information within that theory. So it's somehow strange to say we have a generalized theory, but we describe the information about that generalized theory, about the states in the world, within a classical system. So what we should always try to do is to say if we have a generalized theory, then also somehow the information about the theory, which is of course part of our world, I mean, we have to represent it as part of our world, has to be itself described in this theory. That sounds slightly abstract, but one can do it, for example, for quantum mechanics. So I could now just ask the question, what happens if I look at things we know in quantum mechanics, but I no longer describe them from my classical perspective? I assume that I'm myself quantum mechanical and try to describe the quantum system that I observe in a quantum in a way that where I represent information classically. So somehow, very roughly speaking, I don't any longer assume that I can write down the description of nature on a classical piece of paper. It could be that the physical laws or properties of systems are such that I can only write them down on a quantum paper, so to speak. So this one can now do for specific examples. And I would like to demonstrate one of these examples. So how much time is there? 10? Okay. Before the question session. Okay, so just to illustrate that was maybe a very general claim. Let me just make one example. And the example is from thermodynamics. So, or statistical mechanics is maybe in that case a better way to express that because it's about probability distributions of microstates. So we are used to the following way of thinking. If you have like a system, for example, a gas. I mean, you could think of a gas or something else. Then, if this gas is, if it's classical, we will, of course, say, okay, somehow we can describe the position and momentum of these particles by assigning a probability distribution to them. That's what we know about them. Probably we are completely ignorant about the position, so we have a uniform distribution of the particles and so on. And if it's a quantum gas, we would describe the gas by just writing down a density operator of that. But if we are ourselves quantum mechanical, then in the sense that I just described there, it's no longer possible to do that. So if we have now, if we imagine now that we have an observer here, I call him again Bob, because Bob was now always our quantum observer. So if you have this quantum mechanical Bob who observes the gas, so he kind of wants to do statistical mechanics, for example. But he has a quantum brain. So we could ask, what does he do? How does he see nature? Then the classical, or the current description we have does no longer work, because for the reason I gave there is no probability distribution, and for the same reason there is also in the quantum, when this is quantum mechanical, there is no quantum state alone of that. There is, of course, a quantum state of the joint system, Bob and gas, but we are not used in thermodynamics to kind of include Bob into the description. So if you're now, for example, talking about the entropy of this gas, so let's call that system S. This is just a system that contains particle. We could now ask, what is the entropy? And of course, an entropy in information theoretic terms is observer dependent, so I write here Bob. But I can no longer just say, okay, this is not equal in general for a quantum Bob to the entropy of some density operator as seen by Bob. Exactly for that reason, because Bob could have himself a quantum system, so I cannot condition, so to speak, on the information, on the classical values Bob has. So I cannot write it like that. I'm bound to write it like that. And of course, this, you can also see that this is not possible, because if the system here is quantum mechanical, it could happen that this expression here is itself negative. So this could even be negative. And you can now start to ask, the laws of thermodynamics, are they still valid in this picture for such a Bob? A Bob that is quantum mechanical. If we had a quantum mechanical brain, would we have come up with the same laws of thermodynamics? And I mean, I don't have an answer to this question, but I would like to give you one example where we know at least something now. So the example is related to Landau's principle, and it's just to illustrate. So the purpose of this example is now not to go into thermodynamics, but to illustrate that it makes a difference in general whether we are classical or quantum observers observing the world, and that somehow probabilities are not enough. So what does Landau's principle tell us? Landau's principle tells us the following. If you have a, I mean, in the conventional picture, we would say there's a system, it is in a certain state. And for example, we could do erasure or some other irreversible process. So we want to, for example, erase the system. So this is the system. And erasure means we just initialize it. So we put it back into some initial state, some well-defined state. That's what I call erasure. So this is still the system, and I want to do that process. Now, there could be an environment outside. This is important because I'm now using also a temperature. So I'm assuming that there is somehow an environment I want to do this process, and I'm in an environment at temperature T. So there's an environment at temperature T. Now, what Landau's principle tells us, if you want to erase information, it tells us that the amount of work needed to erase the system. So there is a certain amount of work. I cannot do it for free. And this amount of work depends on the entropy of the system that I had originally. So this is the entropy of S, of this state. And it's proportional also to the temperature. And there's also, just because in information theory we define the entropies with respect to the basis 2, there's also this additional term here, which is otherwise not particularly relevant. So this is what Landau's erasure principle tells us. Now, of course, I could also say, make that somehow observer-dependent, because I'm talking about the state. And for a quantum information theorist, it's somehow strange to talk about the state without saying from whose perspective that state is seen, because we know that state is more like a state of knowledge rather than actually a property of the system. So I draw here my Bob. So Bob is the guy who wants to erase the system. So I can also draw it on the right. Bob is still there when the system is erased. So this is Bob. And the question is, how much work does Bob need to spend to erase the system? And in that language, I would actually prefer to write it in that way. So you could write S given B, which is just the entropy Bob has about the system when he uses all his knowledge. And then there's, of course, the same proportionality constant used here. So this is what Landau's principle tells us. Now, what we could ask is this principle still correct if Bob is no longer classical? Because the Landau principle is so far only used in the context where we have classical observers. This is usually not made explicit, but it's clear that if you read, like, things, if you talk about the density operator describing the state of the system, then it's already implicitly assumed that the system is classical. So this principle is true for a classical Bob. And now in this case, and this is, I just claimed this result, you can prove, and this is a proof by Lydia Del Rio, Oscar Dahlstein, Vladko Vedral, and Johan Aberg, that this formula is still valid, even if Bob is quantum mechanical. But you require new proof. So because, for example, you have new features. As I said, this entropy can become negative because Bob could have so much information about S that his uncertainty becomes negative, which means that in order to erase that system, he actually gains work. So the work he gains is negative, or the work he needs is negative, which means he actually can erase a system and gain work by doing so. And that's one of the features we don't have as long as we only look at our world in a purely classical manner. So obviously, in that case, erasing a system always needs energy. That's what Landau's conventional principle tells us, and this is, of course, not wrong. It's just this principle has been formulated under the implicit assumption that quantum that an observer is classical. So what I would like to suggest is to kind of look at other things from this perspective. You can now go to other branches of physics and ask yourself, what happens if you try to describe the physical laws from this quantum perspective, where we write down the laws of physics or the description of a system in a quantum memory and not necessarily in a classical memory. And maybe it's necessary to do so in order to capture all the properties of physics. And it's actually necessary to do so in information theory. In information theory, you have questions like, how much randomness can you extract from a system? And as long as you do that, as long as you extract randomness from a system, you always have in mind implicitly some observer from whose point of view this randomness is random. So you have to either say that this observer is classical, or you have to redo the proofs. So if you go to a computer science department, there is a whole research branch of randomness extraction, but this always implicitly assumes that somehow randomness is measured with respect to a classical observer. Okay, so this is kind of the main message of the talk, and I would like to end the kind of scientific part of that. There's a small announcement I would like to make. So if I could ask to maybe quickly switch to the slides, that would be great. Is that possible? Yes. Okay, great. Okay, that was just the title. That's, by the way, this New Scientist article where you can read how Stephanie and Jonathan can explain the uncertainty principle. But I would like to make this announcement. We have a small workshop, which this is actually a picture that should illustrate this thing, drawn by Lydia. So if you're interested, please contact or please go to this webpage or contact me or Lydia or Tony, who is also here. I was asked by Matthias to make another announcement. Matthias Christandl is currently organizing a conference on quantum cryptography. So if you're interested, please go to this webpage or contact him. And finally, I would like to thank my collaborators. They're here, so I mentioned them. These are the people that contributed to the generalized uncertainty principle. And then there is also Marco, who also contributed to that. He didn't have space in the previous slide. Lydia is here. If you haven't seen her, okay, then it's probably your fault. Then there is Oscar and Vlatko. Okay, that's all I want to say. Thank you.
Thanks. So I'm wondering whether there's an analog to what you showed us regarding the fact that the EPR argument shows that if you have a classical system, then there's no uncertainty principle. You can predict X and Z. Mm-hmm. Whereas if the system's quantum, then you get an uncertainty principle. Is there an analog of that in the situation of pre and post selection?
Pre-input selection.
Pre and post selection. So again, if I have a measurement which is Z or X, mm-hmm. but I have information from before and from after, uh-huh. assuming like a projection postulate, I can evade the uncertainty principle, mm-hmm. just as I would in the EPR scenario. Mm-hmm. But then you could ask, well, what if instead of that kind of information, I have, say, a pair of quantum systems, one of them gets measured in X or Z, and then later I have access to the pair, and so now I sort of have a quantum pre and post selection, mm-hmm. and I was just curious whether there might be a generalization there as well, where you have you regain an uncertainty principle.
I'm not so far. I'm not, for example, aware of generalization, neither in quantum mechanics nor in somehow a generalized theory. But it's also, I mean, the first thing you need to somehow do if you want to generalize it is always to kind of define such a measure. So somehow, you could ask, what does this entropy measure really mean? Because it somehow tells you, if you think in a classical manner, and that's what people usually criticize when they see that, they say, okay, but Bob still has to measure. As long as he hasn't measured, he doesn't know the value S. So that, this is somehow connected to your question, because we could even define an entropy measure in such a way that even in the quantum case, this is again positive somehow, because if you would somehow force Bob to measure. But I would argue that this is not the point, because we want really to stay on the quantum level and never talk about the measurement on Bob's side, for example. But that's probably also not, you would just have, as far as I understand your question, you would just have several quantum systems, but not measure them. So Bob would not measure them. We just have access to them. But for example, if he has only later access to them, then the question is, how do you define an entropy? An entropy is a static quantity. Does it measure the uncertainty you have at the time, at a certain point in time, or at the, does it measure the uncertainty you potentially have in the future when you have access to additional systems? So the question is always, what does really this entropy mean? And, yeah, but I don't have a good answer to your question. So I think to derive uncertainty principles in generalized theories is a largely open question in that sense. So in the sense, of course, there are generalized uncertainty principles, but in the sense that the Bob, in this thing, is itself has information stored in the generalized theory, so to speak. So that doesn't exist as far as I know.
All right. If the next speaker could come up while we're taking another few questions. So are there any more questions? So I have one, which is I wonder if you've thought in any concrete cases or maybe in Box World about how this works out, you know, for actual generalized theories that aren't quantum theory.
So you mean the uncertainty principle, or
yes, this yes. Your generalized uncertainty principle.
Yes. So as I said, I mean, already as an answer to Rob, it's not. I mean, this is a very good question somehow, which we don't have yet a good answer to. So it seems to me that I mean, one could, of course, take two approaches. Again, one could somehow say, let's just take a generalized theory as it is, and then try to derive such an uncertainty principle in that theory. However, I think it would kind of be more interesting to say, or to ask whether this uncertainty principle, which, I mean, following, for example, Shill's thought, is something given. Like, I mean, instead of God saying there is confidentiality, it would give us slightly more, something more quantitative, and ask whether there is a quantitative formulation of the uncertainty principle, which is not bound to quantum mechanics, but which somehow implies certain things. I think that's also an interesting question, but both questions are, in my view, unanswered, as long as we are taking this generalized view and say that also the Bob, which figures in this uncertainty principle, has to represent the information in the generalized theory. Because I think the existing work would always assume that somehow the Bob is us, and we are kind of, for example, talking about a convex theory where everything is well defined by probabilities, but we are not kind of making the step to say, okay, this could not be general enough, and maybe from outside we are also not classical, seen from outside. So in that sense, I think this is a very nice open question that would be good to hear about.
So one more very quick question. Not, let's thank Renato again and go to the next talk.